This is The Big Web Show. This is everything web that matters. We have guests and we talk about topics like web publishing, art direction, content strategy, typography, web technology, and more. This show is hosted by Jeffrey Zeldman of Happy Cog and Dan Benjamin. That's me. Today's show is sponsored by Beanstalk. It's 2011 and you're still naming files homepage underscore v3 underscore final.html? Come on. Make the resolution to start tracking your changes with Beanstalk. Choose from Subversion or Git, two great version control systems to manage and collaborate on your next design, development, or writing project. You can even preview and share your HTML revisions with clients and partners with the click of a button using the live design preview feature. It's very cool. Learn how to get your design revisions under control today at designers.beanstalkapp.com. And by Rackspace. Rackspace would like to remind you, Jeffrey Zeldman, that just because you know how to administer a server doesn't mean you have to. Rackspace Cloud Servers with a managed service level that lets you focus on the big picture while the sysadmin functions of patching, backing up, and responding to monitoring alerts are handled for you. It's like cloning yourself. Sign up before January 31st and you can save up to $300. RackspaceCloud.com/5x5. Jeffrey Zeldman.
Dan Benjamin.
Great to be here with you, sir.
And with you and our guest, what a pleasure this is. I got to say, Dan, that was the best, most persuasive reading of advertising copy I have ever heard.
If these listeners don't click on these ads, not only won't there be a 5x5 anymore, but we won't have any more sponsors.
Not only that, if they don't click on the ads, I don't know anything about human nature because those were just incredible.
Well, thank you for saying that. I practiced that just for you.
That's good. Did you really? So, as impressed as we are with each other, let's move on to something even more impressive.
Yes.
Our guest today, Jen, has been a designer for 20 years, designing for print, for live performance, and the web. She started designing websites in 1996, so she remembers table design, tables, and Flash, and who knows what else. And we'll find out what else, and we'll talk about how things have changed. And she is leading the charge in the Drupal community for HTML5, which surprisingly isn't a default in Drupal yet. She created the default theme for Drupal 7 named Bartik, which,
like Sephardic, Jeffrey.
Which, when you click on it, says that it's defunct. Or deceased or removed, which is Drupal's friendly, user-friendly way of saying it's very much alive, but the page that it lives on has moved to an undisclosed location.
So
you're a user experience designer, a graphic designer, a web designer, and you're in the Drupal community, which I guess to for those who didn't get the joke, if I were to sort of put the main solutions that we have now, I would say that Drupal mostly attracts a hardcore development crowd, right? Like if you're a developer and you want to do all kinds of amazing stuff, Drupal might be the platform that you would choose.
In the geek world, we would call these people neckbeards.
Or developers.
Sure, right? Same thing.
It's like WordPress is... If you really want to blog, it can do other stuff. It's great at doing other stuff, but really, it's the blogging platform, let's say. And
right.
And Expression Engine is for hybrids who are designers and developers, you know, who aren't afraid of code, maybe who are, you know, if you ask them what they do, they would sort of come down in the middle somewhere, and they want to do more than blog, or they want their clients to do more than blogging, but you know, and they want a very client-friendly platform. Drupal is less client-friendly platform, although it's getting better all the time. It's sort of more power. The trade-off is more power, but less, you know, but steeper learning curve, maybe less ease of use, less immediate ease of use, things like that. So for a designer... And forgive me, I'm coming down with my daughter's cold, so if I sound scratchy, that's what's going on. But for a designer, right, to be in the Drupal community, what's that like? Do you find that you're evangelizing a lot?
I think I've been using Drupal Well, first, hi. I'm very honored. I'm so honored to be here on the Big Web Show and very excited.
Well, we're thrilled to have you.
Oh, thank you. And yeah, I think Drupal has been very hard to use for all kinds of people. And I mean, Drupal is 10 years old this year. It historically has been a community of PHP developers building better and better software that meets the needs that they have and to do the things that they want to do or their clients need them to do. And Drupal kind of has this double identity. It's sort of two things at once. It's both a framework like Ruby on Rails and a content management system like WordPress. So it kind of, there's this tension, people wanting to make it a better and better framework, but also try to make it a better and better product for people to use, which in some ways makes it, like, it doesn't really do either one perfectly, but it also, I think, is pretty amazing because it does do both at the same time. And being, sure. I was a designer who then, like, taught myself web technology in order to build stuff. And definitely 4 years ago, 3 years ago, 2 years ago, to use Drupal, I had to learn a whole bunch of things that I never really intended to learn. But it's gotten much easier. There's a new version of Drupal that just came out, Drupal 7. It's been out 2 weeks. And I think it's pretty revolutionary. I think it's different experience for people to use.
Before we talk about it, Drupal, let's just, I'm saying Drupal. I don't know why. Like it's from another country.
Well, like it's RuPaul.
Yeah, is it?
Yeah, that's what it is. It's RuPaul.
Is it Drupal or Drupal or how are we supposed to say that? Let's just go on the record.
It's Drupal, like P-U-L-L.
Ah.
Oh.
Like, I mean, it's spelled P-A-L, but it's Drupal is how you pronounce it.
Got it.
Drupal. Like Drupal. Nepal. Like Nepal.
No, that's the not.
That's what I was doing. That's what I was doing, but it's Drupal. Okay, how did you pick it? How did you come to? Yeah,
yeah. It was back mid-90s, and I was building. I mean, sorry, mid-2000 years, and I was building a lot of sites on WordPress for clients, a lot of nonprofits, creative small businesses, and I had a project that I needed something a lot more powerful. So. I looked around. I looked at Drupal. I looked at Joomla. And I chose Drupal mostly because the default theme in Drupal 5 at the time was not table-based layouts, while the default theme in Joomla was. And it's not that that one thing was what mattered. It was that I don't know PHP that well. So I figured, you know, if the people who wrote this other software don't even realize that the tables are a bad idea, then I don't know what else might be wrong with it. So
sure,
kind of random, but and I built one site in Drupal 5. It was incredibly painful. It took me like 7 times as long as it should have, and I never touched Drupal 5 again. I was like, I'm done.
That was my experience with Flash 4. A lot of people don't know that. They think web standards is really what I wanted to do, but it was that that you know, no matter how much I dog-eared Hillman Curtis's book, it just took me forever to move letters on a screen. It took me 10 hours to move letters for, you know, and I was just like, I can't do this.
Now, Jan, I think, you know, one of the things that you mentioned about Drupal is that it there is so much that you can do with it. But I think there, at the same time, that is a barrier to some people who want to get started with this. People who come into it saying, wow, I can do pretty much anything I want, but at the same time, you can do anything that you want. And it's not quite as open-ended as, you mentioned, you know, Ruby on Rails, and there Django is another framework, the CakePHP. There's tons of things that simply provide a framework. But you mentioned that Drupal is also, as much as it is a blogging platform, it is a framework. What does that mean? Can you explain that? Because I'm not sure that a lot of people would understand what that means.
I think, you know, Drupal has all these APIs. So there's a whole bunch of tools right there in the toolbox, some of which appear when you, build a Drupal website, like the ability for users to log in right away. You don't have to build that. It's right there. But then there are all these APIs. So if you're building bigger sites, and some really big sites are getting built on Drupal these days, sites where users log in and do things and add content. And you, if you are a coder and you want to write, you know, you're working with a client who needs something pretty complicated, you can hook into all those APIs and use the, you know, use what's there to build something custom or build something special. But also the Drupal, what's really interesting to me and valuable about Drupal is the community itself and how much contributed open source, high quality software is out there that you can just grab off of Drupal.org and add to your website. And you can get pretty far with a pretty complicated website without having to write any custom code. The learning curve is steep. You know, I don't think...
How did you do that? How did you learn that?
Yeah, it was painful in part because I didn't understand how the community works. If, you know, there are books now out. IRC is a great, I mean, it's one of those things where like designers are like, IRC, I don't, what's that? But getting into IRC and asking questions of other people, that people are really willing to help. Now there's videos, there's training, there's a conference, DrupalCon, twice a year, once in Europe and once in the US. It's coming up in March, actually, in Chicago. So there are now a lot of resources for learning Drupal, a lot more than there used to be. And I'd encourage anybody who's either used it in the past or thought about using it, tried it before, to download the new version. Drupal's unique in this, different than other software, in that it changes very radically from one version to the next. You cannot take a Drupal 6 website and simply just like take your theme, move the site to Drupal 7 and keep using the same theme, for example. Or if you've written custom modules, you can't just keep using the same modules. The APIs change too much.
Which is the opposite of WordPress, where they make improvements, but they're back-end improvements and everything pretty much stays the same.
Right. Yeah. So
that's a disruptive experience. So what kind of, does that freak you out? I mean, if you tell me, because I guess I'm more on the design than developer side, as a hybrid, if you tell me that the work I've just done, you know, needs to get changed in 6 months because the tool's better, I get upset.
Well, you don't have to upgrade right away. There's two, like right now, Drupal 6 and Drupal 7 are both being supported. So if you have a Drupal 6 website and you want to keep it on Drupal 6, you can keep it on Drupal 6 until Drupal 8 comes out. And there'll be security updates for Drupal 6. All the modules that people have made will be supported in Drupal 6. And Drupal doesn't come out that often. I mean, Drupal 6 came out 3 years ago. So it's got a long, each version has a long shelf life. The good thing is that, like WordPress sort of locked down its APIs and stopped changing them around version, I think it was like 1.5. And so it was 2004, 2000, somewhere in there. And so everything about the way it's architected is kind of the best practices of that era. And so 5 years from now or 10 years from now, is that going to continue to be the, you know, Drupal is like, things get significantly changed in Drupal. So the database layer, for example, was completely rewritten in Drupal 7 to do much more the kinds of things that people want to do now. And they got rid of the old database layer that was how many ever years old, a bunch of years old. So, yeah, there's a downside because you do have to redo things every 2, 3, 4 years. But usually you're doing them over in that time anyway. There's not a new version of Drupal every 3 months or something.
Well, that's something that's probably worth mentioning, in that, I mean, when the life, we have to think also and take into consideration the lifespan of a website too. I mean, how long does a website go? But here's a bigger question. Let's say that a new version comes out in two years after a website has been developed. All along that process, it's not like it's being kept secret like behind a vault, right? I mean, people can download the beta, they can see what's coming, they can read about it. Am I correct in making that assumption? I mean, it's not going to be a surprise when it drops.
In fact, they can help change it. They can help make Drupal what it is. That's another thing that's really strange and unique about Drupal, is that it's not run by one company. It's not. You know, it's really owned by the community, and there's not a specific set of this is what's coming out in the next version roadmap kind of thing. It's really, well, who steps up to the plate and gets the work done?
How does a community decide as a group of people all over the world, okay, it's time to release the new version.
Dries Bytart, who founded Drupal, and whoever he chooses to be the co-maintainer, or probably in the future a couple co-maintainers, will work together to, they actually make the changes to the software officially. They commit the patches, and they'll decide, you know, okay, well, this is when we're going to do this. But in many ways, it's done when it's done. Like, it just, there's sort of this arc. There's a day that you can start working on it, and there's a day when everybody stops changing the APIs, and then it sort of gets frozen and then fixed, bugs tested, and it's a complicated, crazy, cat-herding community situation.
That sounds like a good logical approach. I'm fascinated by the idea that it's almost like we have the ability to freeze in amber the best practices of now. Like, yeah. You know, 2010 is very different from 2007, very different from 2001. And I, you know, the idea that other platforms might be frozen in 2001 or 2004, it's kind of, you know, there's a downside to that. Talk about, if you will, talk about some of the things we do now that we didn't do 3 years ago that are, you know, that are in the new database layer in the brand new Drupal 7.
Well, a lot of people who use Drupal are big corporations, right? A lot of these big corporations that I know of in New York are switching to Drupal. They're switching from .NET, really. They're migrating all their legacy stuff over. So, and some of them have, you know, these giant databases from their .NET websites where maybe they want to migrate the data, but maybe they want to keep the data where it is. And there's different kinds of databases. Older versions of Drupal just uses MySQL, and new versions, you can like hook up all sorts of different kinds of things. Part of what's interesting about Drupal is that most of the people who develop the next version of the software and help shape the future of what the software is are full-time Drupal developers or full-time Drupal designers. So somehow their full-time job is working in Drupal. So then they have these sort of big projects, big clients with these very specific edge case needs that's part of why it's so flexible and everybody kind of wants, you know, different things out of it. But.
So Jen, in every space, there are competitors. And who's the competitor for Drupal then? Is it Rails and Django? Is it WordPress? Is it Expression Engine? And this is the kind of thing that when you suggest using a platform to a client and, you know, just like you and Jeffrey, I spent many years doing, you know, consulting and development work, you've got to often justify your choice of a platform to your potential client. You know, who are the competitors in this space, and what are some of the things that make Drupal stand out that are really, really great selling points, and maybe in a way sell some of the listeners on it? I mean, why should we consider this when there are other avenues to go down, and why would our client be happy with this choice?
I think everything you mentioned is a competitor. People talk a lot about WordPress and Drupal or Joomla and Drupal, but I think Rails and Ruby on Rails and .NET and other sorts of frameworks are frequently. I think it depends on what you're doing, what your project is. The reason I like Drupal and the reason I got excited about it as a designer, because I still consider myself a designer more than a developer, is I could build much more complicated websites, without going out and learning, you know, how to create my own content management system from scratch or learn some of these frameworks. Installing it, clicking buttons, downloading plugins, which are called modules, and turning them on, and click, 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 click. You can click together a really sophisticated website without a whole lot of time. You know, it's just faster than doing something like, you know, opening up a PHP document and just hand coding an entire CMS. Sure. And that was really attractive to me. Like, what do you mean? I can build a site like Flickr? I can build a site like, you know, I can build one of these sites where people can log in and do things? Like, I could sell that to my client instead of just building a whole bunch of more, you know, brochure websites or blogs, which is what I was doing before Drupal.
Are you able to customize the user experience in those? I mean, the way we work a lot of times, we first figure out what the goals are, then we sit, you know, we create a user experience architecture, and then, you know, we design how that looks and what all the screens are, and then the last thing we do is develop. But here it's the exact reverse of that, where someone's figured out a lot of stuff, but is it necessarily working the way you might design it from scratch?
You can do anything you want with Drupal, actually. You can actually make anything you want out of it. There are some things that Drupal likes to do better than others, and there's some ways you can kind of lean into letting Drupal be Drupal. And, you know, much like some of these other systems like WordPress, there's just certain ways that the content's going to land on the page. And if you don't fight it, you're going to be better off. But it's really...
Has it changed the way you... Has that... I hear what you're saying with that. Your music might change if you recorded with all, like, their, the DAP tones, right? They only record, and their producer only records with, like, equipment from the 1960s, like rotary dials instead of faders and, you know, tube amps and everything. And it changes the way they make music. It changes the kind of songs they write.
Yeah.
Does that same thing happen with you as an experienced designer, where you're so familiar with the platform that you... Now you think, you know, this is how a member page should look and should work. This is how, you know, this is how much we should ask of a potential user before they become a member. You know, this is how we should do privacy, all these things. Does the tool change your thinking and evolve your thinking?
I think it does some. I also think that the web and the way the web is right now probably does more. Where, because so many clients come in the door and they kind of already have this idea of what they want, that they want this from Facebook and this from Twitter and this from this website, kind of Frankenstein together into their own. And, you know, ideally as a designer, you're able to go in and say, okay, well, let's that's great. Let's back up a minute. Let's talk about why your website exists and who your users are and see if we can't, you know, figure out what's best for your users rather than, you know, Flickr's users or Facebook's users. I think Drupal, you know, there's definitely ways that Drupal kind of interjects in there and goes, hey, I'd like to do it this way. But
as a freelancer, right? You're a freelancer.
Actually, I work for a company. I started working for a company called Palantir.net. They're in Chicago.
Okay.
I do web development and web design and use Drupal a lot for our projects.
So you not having that conversation with clients now, where the client comes in and wants to Frankenstein this and that, or do you fly out to Chicago and meet with the clients?
I do. Yeah, I will. You know, I'm still new there, but yeah, I will be doing some of that, or working with teams where other people are doing that and talking to clients.
I like you, and I'm interested in whether you're employed or not. But the reason I asked the question was really because it sounds like and you're not a freelancer anymore, but it sounds like this would be an ideal tool for the people in our audience who are listening who maybe work out of their apartment or in a shared, you know, a co-working space, and they're competing for, you know, bigger jobs. They're competing against agencies and, you know, but they don't have a whole team of IAs to sit with them. They don't have a whole, you know, they can't, but the client still wants what all clients want. And it's a good tool for the person to be able to say, oh, sure, we can do it. You need a member page? Sure, we could do that. Yep. A wiki for your users? Yeah, that's not a problem. It allows you to be bigger because, in a way, you've got that whole Drupal community doing some of the work for you. It's like, and you're putting work back into it as well. So, you know, it's an ecosystem. It's fair. I mean, that's a very impressive selling proposition to me for a very small team or a freelancer, I think, which is, you know, I'm not that anymore, but that's where my heart is. That's how I started my company, and I did that for a long time, you know, and it's tough. It's tough to when you have to be the project manager, the user experience designer, the graphic designer, the coder, everything.
Yeah.
What tools, so you already talked about, you said there are, can you recommend some videos or books or anything that anyone who's interested in this, because we're not going to just talk about Drupal, but while we are there things people could, you know, to get over that steep learning curve? Is there some introductory text or what do you recommend?
Yeah, there's, if you go, to Drupal.org, there's a whole section on a whole list of all the books that are out right now for Drupal, which is always a great way to start if that works for you to learn things. Lullabot has a video series. You can buy videos one at a time, or you can they have a subscription service now. You can just get access to all their videos for a fee per month. There's the DrupalCon conference in March in Chicago. The early bird registration ends tomorrow on the 21st. I think the early bird price is $350, and then it will go up to $400. And there's a lot of great people who are going to be there speaking. Jared Spool, Clay Shirky, Mark Bolton, Jeremy Keith. It's a lot about Drupal. It's also, you know, about web design development in general.
We talked about this yesterday about they reached out to me, but I just felt since I didn't use the platform that I shouldn't speak there. But that you think that was stupid?
Or I think you should come speak. Yeah, it'd be great. I think it'd be great to have you come for sure.
I just imagine people going, but how does that apply to Drupal? Or but in the Drupal such and such module, and I don't really know, sir.
It's funny. People, you know, and I've become one of them. People are very passionate about Drupal, and I think it happens because it is one of these places on the web where people are doing it just for the sake of doing it. They love the work they're doing. They love code and having pure code. They love creating tools and giving them away to people for free. And you end up just getting really passionate about, because I went from someone who could build this certain kind of website to someone who could build a way more sophisticated website in almost the same amount of time. And clients want that. You said it really well earlier. Like, clients come and they want Facebook and they want to spend $10,000 to get it. And you're like, well, do you know how much money Facebook spent building Facebook? Like, it was more than $10,000. But with some of these tools that Drupal provides, you actually can. You can go ahead and start building out a lot of those types of websites for people.
Now, when you started designing websites in 1996,
yeah,
what was your process there? How did you what had you been doing? How did you get into it? And
I was working at this nonprofit, an arts organization. So I was wearing a lot of hats, and I was doing all their print design for every event we were putting on. I'd do the postcards and the poster and the magazine ads and. And then I was like, we need a website. You know, I learned about the web and from a Clinton administration event, you know, where Al Gore was giving out all these grants, and I went and everyone was talking about this web thing. I was like, what's that? So I just started, I got a book on HTML and started teaching myself
book?
HTML.
Yeah,
I don't,
which book?
It probably was like a Peach Pit, you know, HTML3 book. I don't know by who. And I had BB Edit, you know, and just started coding BB Edit.
Was it learn HTML in 24 hours?
No.
Okay. That's what I used, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
BB Edit, yes.
Yeah. This is before Dreamweaver, right? Like before Dreamweaver showed up.
Yeah. You don't.
And then Dreamweaver seems so awesome because you could just click and draw stuff.
You were a Dreamweaver user?
Yeah. Yeah.
Are you still?
No.
I was going to say, I have a question coming in here from the chat room. Bradland wants to know, in contrast to more general frameworks, Bradland asks, like Symfony or Ruby on Rails, how do you think the effort scales when doing more custom work? In other words, when you get into something that's very custom, I'm hoping this is where Bradland was going. When you're doing something that's highly customized, it's very, very specific, sometimes you actually find you can be fighting against that tool, whether it's Drupal or whatever, where you actually start to hit those limits of what it can do. If the goal is to be able to go in and select the modules and start building a solution, at what point do you hit that wall? Or at what point does the amount of effort you'd have to spend to do that custom work actually equal out the amount of work that if you're an experienced developer, let's say, that you might already be spending? And I actually, in a way, this kind of relates back to 5x5 itself. I built 5x5 in Rails. I didn't want to. I have, you know, spent many years writing code and building CMSs and things like that. So I knew I could do it. But when I started out, I actually auditioned Drupal and WordPress and Expression Engine. And I had a very specific set of features and things that I wanted to do. And it was very unique and custom. And it is essentially what you see out there today at 5x5. But I knew that I could spend an amount of time and I knew that I could get some of these other tools to do it. But I had to make a decision. Do I spend the time to ramp up and learn these other tools? And Drupal was in the lead, by the way. Or do I just go to a framework that I already know? And the effort for me actually wound up being more or less equal. But I'm curious about that. For somebody who maybe doesn't have that kind of experience, what do you think? I mean, at what point does that change take place?
Yeah, I think there's no easy answer. There's no, you know, this is the way it always is. I think it depends. It depends on what you already know. It depends. In some ways, Drupal was easier for me to learn because I knew WordPress so well, and they're very similar technologically, but under the hood. You know, they're both PHP. They both have templating frameworks. So I don't know. I mean, I don't know. It depends. And I think no matter what tool you use, no matter what you're doing, if you're a sculptor and you're sculpting in marble instead of welding in steel, that's going to affect what you create. It's going to change what you create. And I think no matter what you're using on the web, when we're talking about, we've been sort of assuming websites, but you know, there's all mobile and there's all these new things constantly happening. A lot of things are affecting what you're creating and how easily it is or is not easy to build. So I think each time you have a new project, you just have to check it out and see what's best. Right now, Drupal is incredibly popular. A lot of people are coming to the conclusion that Drupal is the right fit for them, the right tool for them. I do not know any unemployed Drupal people. Everyone I know who works in Drupal has more work than they can possibly handle and is turning things down left and right. So if you want some short-term job security, Drupal's a great platform to learn.
What other design work do you do?
Right now I'm designing a mobile app, which has been really interesting and very disorienting. It's going to be an app for both the iPhone and Android.
It's a native app as opposed to...
It's a native app.
Okay.
It's a web standards app.
Yes. It's a native app. And it's for the DrupalCon conference coming up in March. So it's related to Drupal and it will pull a lot of its data, if not all of its data, off of the Drupal website. I'm not working on that part though. Someone else is. But I'm designing it. It's really nice to just be able to design. And it's very weird to design for something that I don't... I don't know it yet. I'm still figuring it out.
What's your process? Are you sketching? Did you start by asking people questions? What's your process for developing this app?
Yeah, I am
designing this app.
I started by talking to people who, you know, doing a bit of totally informal research, I guess you could call it, about, you know, how people might want to use this app. I also downloaded 3 or 4 dozen apps that other people have made for conferences, all kinds of different conferences, and just tried them out on my phone.
Did you try a Feet Apart?
I did not, no.
Feet Apart,
I'll have to check that out.
An event apart?
It's such a strange thing because it seems so easy, but yet I think that's the brilliance of these devices is that they seem so easy, but they're really not that simple. But yeah, you know, sketching in my head, I guess I call it, and then drawing things out in Omni Graffle. And then I like doing typography in CSS. I hate laying out typography in Photoshop.
Oh, yeah, me too. Oh, my gosh. It's so much easier in CSS.
It just seems like a total waste of time to do it in Photoshop because it doesn't look at all like it's going to later. And so then you mislead everyone and you get sign off on things that aren't real.
But yet if you try to completely prototype the layout in CSS, you start committing. You're doing so much programming that you're kind of committing to a look and feel that you're not, you know,
Yeah.
There's no perfect tool. It's like you should be able to do the basic layout in Photoshop and then somehow do the type in CSS, but I don't, in HTML, but I don't know how.
I really wish there were a tool. I wish there was a tool that worked sort of like Illustrator meets OmniGraffle meets, you know, Coda, where you could write CSS and you could then have that be a style that gets perpetuated through this tool that you're in.
Right. A style, the way print tools work, the way print design tools work. So I don't have to explain to a print tool, this is my paragraph style, or I do it and it propagates. Yeah. The idea that, you know, that every paragraph, that every, if you have a dozen H3 headlines in Photoshop, you have to set each one up the same way. And we've had comedies of errors too from time to time where if the designer and the developer aren't the same person.
Yeah.
Right? And it's like.
Yeah.
Well, now speaking
is different on this one. So
speaking of things like CSS and design, I just got to say that the chat room is going crazy. They really want me to ask you about HTML5 and everything that you're doing there, because this hasn't come up yet. But you're apparently heralding the effort to get Drupal working with HTML5 across the board. And what, first of all, what does that mean? The term HTML5 has been redefined a number of times, but what is this that you're doing?
I assume you mean CSS. I assume
this week.
By HTML5 you mean CSS.
Well, I was going to write some HTML5 in my style sheet tomorrow, and actually there is a lot of CSS3 in Drupal 7 already. A lot of Drupal 7, and the theme that I created, Bardic, has a lot of CSS3 in it. But there's no sort of HTML5 markup in Drupal 7. There's a form API in Drupal, and the form, the stuff that it outputs is all, you know, XHTML 1.0 style markup. And that's been a struggle. It's been a struggle in the Drupal community to get people to adapt web standards and to understand why HTML and well-formed HTML is important. I think it's a challenge with any powerful CMS to get quality HTML out of it. There are people in the Drupal community who kind of rant and rave and demand that the markup get improved. And in Drupal 7, it's much better. The markup that comes out of Drupal is much better than it ever has been before. But I'd like it to be, you know, there's a number of us who would really like it to be HTML5. I want to use Drupal and build HTML5 sites and have it be easy. And there's certain parts that are
good semantic HTML5.
Yeah. Which is even harder, because if you're building a content type, which you do in Drupal, and you say, oh, I'm building a film festival website, I need to enter films into my website. So I have a content type named film, and it's got a title and a director and a length of the film and, you know, a short description, a long description. And you build out all these forms that then the person who's adding the film to the website can fill out a form and hit save. And it automatically gets, you know, all that data gets well kept well, and you can output it. You can design the output so that everything comes out. You know, the titles are red and the director's name is italicized. It's very easy and very, very foolproof. But how are you going to say, oh, the director's name should be, you know, it's hard enough when there's just a handful of options for elements, HTML elements. And now when there's so many more, well, this is an article, this is a section, this is a nav. This list of links is a nav. This list of links is not a nav. It's going to be a bit of a challenge to figure out how to create an interface, a user interface, where people can specify which HTML5 element they want to use, even if they don't know anything about HTML. So it's going to be interesting to get into that problem with people and sort of see if we can solve it.
Also, the outlines within outlines.
Yeah.
In HTML5, in a way, are perfect for a CMS. They're like designed for a world of content management, but they also, it can cut either way, depending on how, you know, how much thought goes into it. You could make a module that works beautifully, or make a module that blows apart the layout because the designer didn't take into account that this module might be on, you know, the H1 might be a real headline on this page, and here it might be an H1 might be a subheader in this module. And interesting. interesting times. It just adds a dimension of complexity to your task, which, since it's Drupal, that's great because these are people who like to learn a new system every few years. So you're making it more complicated. That's awesome.
Well, and you know, the way things change in Drupal is that people just step up and do it. So there's a group. There's actually quite a few people in New York who are very interested in working on this. So we're getting together and starting to write code or starting to make lists of like, okay, this is what we need to figure out.
That's
much
cool.
Like everyone else is with HTML5.
How did you get to be the designer of the default template for Drupal 7?
Yeah.
Was there a competition? What happened?
So there used to be maybe four or five themes, four in Drupal, and they were showing their age, and most of them were made out of tables. So there was a movement to get them out, to remove them from Drupal. And then there was this question, well, of what are we going to replace them with? And they talked about, there was a discussion about having a contest, but most of the designers in the community immediately like smacked that down. We're like, not having a design contest. It's already hard enough to be a designer in Drupal. We already don't feel respected. If you have a design contest, that's it. So there was no design contest. But I also was never chosen to do it. No one picked me. I didn't get the job. I just started making a theme. And I'd done sort of theming, design themes before, which is kind of an interesting but tricky assignment to design for no content.
Right. It's the hardest.
Especially,
thing.
Yeah. And with WordPress, you know that there's a post, there's a page, it's a blog. But with Drupal, you don't even know what people are going to make. You don't know what kind of content they're going to have.
Wow.
So I just started working on it. And there were other people who were well-known in the Drupal community who really encouraged me because I felt like, who am I? I can't, you know, I don't deserve it. No, it doesn't. My stuff doesn't matter.
Why do you have that thought? A lot of us have that thought. It's a really bad thought.
Mm-hmm. It's very easy to have, but yeah, it makes sense.
The whole negativity of I can't do that or I don't matter, it's really important to banish that from your life.
Or I'm not famous enough, or nobody knows who I am.
Everybody who's famous enough is famous enough because they didn't let that get in their way.
Yeah.
You know, before Prince was just a guy with a guitar, right?
Yeah.
He didn't get to be, he didn't, right? Yeah. You two were just some kids in the garage.
Yeah.
Right? You don't.
And nobody picked them either. Nobody came along
them.
And
nobody
said,
handed it to them. Nobody said, you're Bono, and when you're 40, you're going to be doing all this African stuff, so.
Yeah.
Here you go. Your band's going to make it. No, they just, you just do it.
Yeah. And that's how this worked. I just did it.
Yeah.
And for a long time I worked on it in my head, and then I worked on it in CSS. I never did any drawings of it. I just coded it. And finally when I felt like it was 80% done, I showed it to the community. I posted an issue on the issue queue, it's called, in the Drupal world, where you say, I have an idea. I think we should do this. And it got bashed.
Showing design in an open source community. I mean, we've done it a few at Happy Code. We've done it a few times and been fairly lucky. But it's a really tough process.
It's really
because
painful.
Nobody's invested in it. Nobody knows what problems you're trying to solve. But you know, everyone's emotional. Everyone's got an opinion, and everyone doesn't like it because this is a change.
Yeah. Exactly. And, you know, most of the people commenting are not designers at that moment. Right. They have other interests and other skills. And people don't necessarily have the time to really get in depth. I think design is such a deep question. To do good design, you have to get down deep inside of something. And you can't do that in 15 minutes. You can't just look at something and go, oh, yeah, I think that's good or bad.
That's the money quote. What you just said is the money quote for this episode. Even though it wasn't about Drupal, it was like, that was great. I think that's exactly right. But it's evaluated, but design is evaluated in 5 minutes.
Yeah.
Sometimes the most important decision maker comes to the meeting late, doesn't hear any of the preamble, doesn't know why you're doing what, you know, was too busy to participate in all the meetings that led up to whatever it is. It's not in your case, but nobody was there in your soul when you did this. And how in the world, how do you design something? I mean, I find it hard to design a template, like even a shopping template where you know what the people are going to do. It's still, if it's got to work for different, we just did that for Shopify. And like to design something that's going to work for someone who makes bread and someone who sells books and someone who makes computer software. I mean, how do you do that? Yeah. And have it have enough personality to be real and present and tangible and likable, but not get in the way and be transparent. So when you have nothing, you have, you know, you have, I don't even, do you start with colors? What did you
I wanted to do it black and white, completely black and white. It turned out in the end that it's a very, very blue theme. The Drupal community really loves blue, and they, that was a decision that was made. It was like, turn it blue or it's not going in. So now it's blue. But there is, I don't know, there's a demo site. I don't know if you're looking at it, but there's a demo site out there, or anyone who downloads Drupal. When you first install Drupal and you land on the site and it says, this is your website, the theme doesn't look that good. It's totally empty, and it's got this big blue banner. But there are, if you go to, into the appearance section and you find the theme and you hit the settings button, you can change the colors. When you start adding content to the site, and you can take blocks of content and stick them in different places, whole new regions, whole new things start appearing that were not there at first glance. And that, I worked very hard on designing that. I designed pages that were full of content. I just would drop dummy text in and then work on typography. So first impressions, some people are very critical, because it's just so empty, you can't see anything. But also, you know, I started designing this in mid-2009, and there were a lot of sites that came out right in that era, all at the same time, that were very minimal and very black and white. Like, the actual theme was black and white and simple. Yeah. And I just jumped on that bandwagon. It's a lot of Georgia, a lot of, you know, hours spent tweaking numbers with the typography, because I wanted it to be the default theme that would work for kind of anything, which means it needs to be completely nonspecific and work and not have any, try not to have much of a flavor and let the content be everything.
Like Doug Bowman's Minima for, what was the name
for
of that
Blogger.
Platform?
Blogger. I used that theme as a base theme. I can't tell you how many websites I built on top of that theme.
My hat's off to Doug Bowman every time I think about that. Yeah, that was such an influential and beautiful, beautiful glass of water that he designed.
Mm. Well, guys, we are almost out of time here. So let's plug you a little bit, Jen. Where can people go if they want to find out more about you or read about your work or see other things you've done, follow you on Twitter? What are people supposed to do here?
My name on everything is Jen Simmons. So Twitter is Jen Simmons. I have a website at jensimmons.com. My website right now has mostly presentations that I've done about HTML5 and about CSS3. I hope, you know, to get more. I think all of us, right? I have more things I want to do with my website. I just need to have time to do them.
Right.
And what about Bardic? Because when we go to drupal.org/project/Bardic, B-A-R-T-I-K, it says abandoned, obsolete, even though, and two sites are report using this theme, but obviously the millions of sites are using it. So,
see, that page would be... Yeah, I need to.
It goes nowhere. Is there something?
This afternoon I'm going to work on changing that page so that it doesn't look so scary.
So it points to the actual theme. Does it?
That page is where Bardic would live if Bardic was not in Drupal. If Bardic was like a theme that you could download the way you can go to WordPress and download themes, or you can go to Drupal.org and download other themes.
So now that it's no longer.
It's not a standalone project, so that page is not. We use that temporarily to share code and to work on the project together. But it lives inside Drupal. So you just go and you download Drupal itself. Drupal 7.
So you download Drupal 7 and install a few modules, and you'll start to see what Bardic is all about. And I would suggest for the Drupal community, although I'm sure they know this, besides working with designers, content strategists would be good.
Because
there's this whole, you have reached the dead end and F you.
Well, and Drupal.org, the website, has is radically better. It's so much better than it used to be. Mark Bolton and Lisa Reichheld were hired to redesign Drupal.org, which they did, and the work that they did finally got finished and launched just a few months ago. And then Mark and Lisa redesigned the Drupal itself, the software Drupal. And so it has a whole completely new administration interface, new information architecture for the tools of Drupal. It's radically different than the past. Much, much easier to use, much more beautiful. So they both deserve a lot of credit, and all the people who worked on it with them.
We wanted to look. I can't get it to load. Maybe the show, so maybe Dan clicked on it. Anyway, yeah, and we would love to have them on to talk about that too.
Yeah,
that
in the process great. Of, you know, they really designed with the community.
They kind of
went off into my own little hole and said, no, this is just how it is. Like, people would come up with ideas. Oh, let's change. And I was like, yeah, no. I was very strong.
I would prefer that. I don't know how they had the stamina to do
that.
They're
very open. Very open. They built a whole website for people to be able to comment on the work that they were doing as they were doing it.
It was called throwpiesatus.com, I believe.
I think it was D7UX. Okay.
All right, guys. Well, that's gonna do it for this episode. But Jen, thank you so much for tuning in. Jeffrey, as always,
thank you.
And it's great to do this today. Jeffrey will be back next week, same time, same place.
Right? Exactly.
Okay. So it'd be great to have people who want to be part of the show. You can tune in. You go to 5x5.tv/live. You can watch the show live. You can stream it with iTunes or in your mobile Safari browser, whatever. We have little instructions on that page, but we'd also love to hear your feedback. 5x5.tv/contact. And that's really it. We want to say thanks to our sponsors, RackspaceCloud.com, PostmarkApp.com. Thanks to MailChimp.com for sponsoring the bandwidth. And thanks to Wistia.com, who does our videos. So we've said thank you to everybody but you guys. So thanks to you guys for listening. And we really do appreciate it. We wouldn't be here without you. So we'll see you again next week. Have a good one.